Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 23rd of February, 2023. I'm joined by Leo.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the, someone's messed with my thing, god damn it. We're going to talk about just let the ship sink already, because I'm done. I had it with this place. I'm going to explain to you why, but
Normally people wait until middle age to reach this level of despondency and despair.
Oh, the middle age are doing fine. They're doing just fine. You will see I have some Gen Z animus about not having money compared to old people to go through, but it's justified, I think. Shamina Begum's failed appeal.
Yep.
And the fact she be gone. And the, diversity face that people keep putting on, which I think is going to be good fun.
Did I ever mention I'm 164th Cherokee?
No, you didn't. I knew you were a woman.
Yeah,
there's a new one.
Gender fluid, non-binary. That's the what diversity face, because everybody, even like the most boring white people, want to have something diverse about them. So now in comedy, all the comedians are being like, oh, I've never had any same-sex experience or whatever, but I'm queer.
Did you see what was it? There was before we even start, there was some politician in America who was debating. He was going to be like mayor, and his opposition candidate was a black woman.
Right.
So they said, well, you are a white man. And he went, well, I'm Italian. I'm not white.
Yeah,
I'm Italian.
I'm not Scandinavian.
Remind me of Chris Cuomo, who was like, well, I'm not a rapist, I'm Italian. Come on. Weird defense. We shall begin, though. So, yeah. I just sink it. Just I'm done. I'm done with this place. I don't want it anymore. I've missed out the goddamn plug I was meant to do. Let's start again. Forgot to mention, there's a gold tier Zoom call this week, end of the week. That's tomorrow. Yeah, a whole day away. But anyway, if you're in the gold tier, come do it. If you're not, don't. Otherwise, we shall begin properly this time. So I want to sink this place. I'm upset. I'm mad because I've been looking at data, and data makes me sad. Because every time you look at the UK's data, it's not great. Specifically on housing, yet again, I am storming, just like Brad's wife's husband. We'll start off just by mentioning something on lotuseaters.com, being immigration is the reason you can't get a house. This is where we just went through the data, and you can make all kinds of arguments. I'm not saying it's the only thing that drives house prices, obviously, but the argument becomes, well, if you can mess with the town planning laws, you can mess with interest rates.
Yeah.
But if there's no one in the house paying the mortgage or paying the rent,
yeah,
well, then you've got a ghost city.
Yeah. And also, as it pushes house prices up, immigration being an endless supply of labor pushes the price of labor down. So you're competing with the richest people in the UK for houses, and you're competing with the rest of the world for wages. So your wages go down, house prices go up, doesn't make it easier to get a house.
I'm saying it's absolutely the number one reason as to why things have gotten so bad, specifically for the UK, and I think I'll be able to prove that as well. But if you want more details, we did do a whole podcast about that. But starting off, we'll go with the immigration opinion map, we'll start off with what happened in the 1990s, because here's a graph that's showing real terms percentage change in house prices in the G7 countries since 1970.
Mm.
And you may have noticed there are two countries that are taking the piss, being the UK and Canada. The UK, something happened in the 1990s to them, and then all of a sudden, the whole country became basically unaffordable forever. And with the Canadians, more about like 2008, where they're rising that high tide of fake house prices, but they actually did a good job getting out of that, is my understanding. They didn't screw themselves over like everyone else. And as a result, they've also not been building houses, been allowing people to buy them up from foreign lands, and now they have no houses, so house costs more. Simple as. Whereas the rest of the world has their own unique issues. Japan, no one lives there.
Yeah.
They don't allow foreigners, so... Well,
and also their houses actually depreciate in price. So they're built to... It's like buying a car.
It gets worse over time.
Yeah.
And then the Germans, and I think, what is it, the US? Like, it's a very recent uptick. Whereas the Italians and the French, yeah, whatever. But there you have it. We'll go to the opinion map mode for the UK, because this is a new poll that came in. Unheard did this. You want to guess? The question was asked, immigration's level's too high, agree or disagree? Green is agree here, that it's too much. And if you want to scroll down some more, John, should we have a look at the UK? It's pretty unanimous.
By area, it's pretty unanimous.
It is.
Where are the bits where... I mean, I can't see it. I can see a little blip.
This is by constituency, parliamentary constituency. There is one parliamentary constituency in the whole country that thinks there's not enough immigration. It is Bristol West, one of the most leftist hives of scum and villainy you will ever find. Every other place, including every other leftist place in the country, is like, nah, mate, come on.
Mm.
What do you mean there's not enough?
Yeah.
Are you mad?
But voters have always said they want, you know, sensible immigration levels. Britain's not an anti-immigration place, but we want sensible immigration where, you know, we're sort of cherry-picking the best people from around the world, and there's not, you know, huge volumes of people coming over and competing with us for wages. And governments never listen. No. Governments love immigration because it's like steroids for the economy. It's like chucking kindling on a fire. You know, you get this rush of economic activity as you got cheap labour. And it's also good for, you know, they think it's good for the economy because it, you know, pushes the prices of fixed assets such as housing up.
It kind of reminds me of that Futurama episode where they're like, well, the world is warming. So what we do is we have a big block of ice dropped in every couple of years. And then every year. And then the girl's like, well, won't the water get larger and larger? And then, shut up. just ignore the quick fix being a quick fix. Yeah. We've got the immigration graph, just for foreigners who might not know. I made this because we had all the other data, and then the most recent data came out for 2022, which was literally off the graph. I had to add that point.
Jeez.
It's 500,000. That's net.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's over 1 million gross.
Yeah.
And then 500,000 people from here leave.
Yeah.
And you end up with 500,000 inflow and an actual replacement rate there of about 1.5 million.
Mm.
So then you also have the cultural aspects to deal with, but not even going to talk about this today. Not even relevant for today, because we're going to go to UK housing, which is just fantastic. And this article, this is what pissed me off. Sunday Times. The house prices made Britain an inherentocracy. Not a great argument, but they have some very good data in here. They say Jane, 60, from Surrey, tells us a tale familiar to her generation. She bought a home in 1980 for about £22,000, using a deposit of £2,000. That she and her partner had saved about £8,000 today.
£8,000,
yeah.
For a deposit. I mean, where was the house? It's in Surrey. I take it. So not some terrible place, you know, in Scotland or somewhere where you'd expect houses to be cheap.
Don't worry.
You could buy a flat in Glasgow with a deposit of £8,000.
I think there are some the desolate towns, completely abandoned. You could buy a house for £1.
Yeah, but you've got to commit to investing a certain amount in redoing it.
And because it's a desolate town.
Yeah.
But no, in Leafy Surrey, she was able to buy a house for £8,000 in today's terms. That was not an option for Emma, now 42, a landscape gardener, also in Surrey. She and her partner, Adam, were on good salaries, but have been paying £1,600 a month in rent for a decade.
Mm.
That's, what is that? I don't want to calculate how much that is. That's just going to hurt. Saving for a deposit in an area where terraced houses cost nearly £400,000 was unsurprisingly out of the question. So then they have to go off and ask the bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
Because of course they do. And mum and dad will have money because
she is too ugly for OnlyFans.
There's that option as well. I mean, what should become of Britain's youth? Whores. That's how we'll pay for houses.
Yeah.
Good low irrigation. No. We'll turn everyone into whores. But this is something I actually find myself agreeing with leftists when they S-post about it.
Yeah.
We'll go to local leftist. Decided to post something, which was true. You ever seen these articles that are like, I stopped eating at Domino's and I could buy a house?
Yeah.
And they're like buried in there will be, and I got a small loan of $100,000 from my parents.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So in here, this person's like, I saved over $100,000 in 3 years' time and I was 27. Here are my top money-saving tips. And in the middle of the article, she just mentions that, well, yes, my parents did give me a lot of money.
Yeah.
£35,000.
A year.
A year. So they didn't have to pay for university in the United States.
Yeah. So she should have saved more.
Yeah, if anything, she's pretty bad with money.
She got given more money than she saved.
Mm. And still messed it up.
Yeah.
I mean, just a great point. I saved £100,000 by having my mum give me £140,000.
Yeah.
Amazing money tip. Unfortunately, the leftists may have noticed this retardation, but are also retarded themselves, as the next image from this individual will show. Unskilled labor is a capitalist myth. Shows video of man putting jugs in holes.
And they're saying that's skilled labor.
It's skilled.
I mean, he is good at putting the bottles in the holes.
He is.
But I mean, I learned that at primary school. So.
And you ever heard of a robot?
Yeah, yeah.
You ever seen a car be made?
Yeah.
This is not difficult to replace in the slightest. And also the idea that it's something only certain human beings can learn.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the economics side of this, because I saw Economics Explains YouTube channel, who I quite like. They did a video about this as well, about the idea that the boomers have stole their youth's future.
Yeah.
Not the future. Living in it.
Mm.
Like, the problem is today. It's not in 20 years, as everyone always thinks it'll be. No, it's now. And the big thing they talk about in here is the housing divide, which is just true. You can see this in political circles as well. If you look at voting data, the left-right divide is less and less on the grounds of, I don't know, rich or poor, different classes fighting each other. That entire paradigm is long since dead.
Yeah.
And it's now very much urban versus rural. And a lot of that also comes down to age, which is a new thing.
Yeah.
People think that it's always said it isn't. If you look back at the voting data, that the massive divide we have now is relatively new. And I think it is because there are such different interests from class of people who just pay rent.
But so many
who own loads of property.
So many in the younger generation are really sort of far left, and they want a much greater redistribution of wealth, which I sort of understand because the older generation have got lucky. So. Yeah, so of course the younger ones that can't afford houses and stuff are going to want redistribution of wealth, but they also want open borders, immigration, a lot of them, and it's just interesting how the sort of powers that be have sort of hypnotized everybody to believe that wanting open borders, immigration is some sort of beneficent, wonderful, just kind thing to do, when in fact it causes social instability, causes the rise of gives ammunition to the far right, and also really rewards the capitalists and rewards landowners, property owners, anybody
I don't know about you. I kind of put that whole thing down to the NPC effect. The fact that if someone buys in with like 0.1 of any political group, they'll start buying into all of their beliefs.
Right, yeah.
You know how someone like they'll agree with something and then you find like 10 years later they've become a full leftist.
Yeah.
They agree on absolutely every leftist point. It's like, why?
Yeah. But it's just amazing that, open borders has become, is seen as a sort of far left thing. I mean, I think traditionally, your old school socialists were like, no, we don't want unlimited immigration. We want to have some bargaining power with our wages.
Well, those protesters in Liverpool are all far right now. People are labor of the country. There's some points in here that Economics Explained, I think, does a good job on. He mentions the fact, for example, that houses are unproductive assets. It's actually not great for an economy to have so much of your economy based in housing because it doesn't produce anything.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you can collect rent, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And also for the UK, this ain't great because in 2014, 12% of our GDP was in real estate. God knows what it is now.
Yeah.
Because it's only gotten worse, of course. And then he also mentions the fact that you're also kind of stuck. Well, you kind of screw over people's ability to move for work. Say if you're an employer and you want to employ people and you're probably in a city paying loads of money for high quality employees. Well, if the rent's now really, really high because of the way the housing situation works in your country, you can't actually get that employee to move out of their mum's house.
Yeah.
Because if they came to work with you in the city, they're not actually saving any money. They're spending all on rent.
Yeah.
So that's just crap.
Yeah, and also the workforce isn't mobile around the country because if you manage to buy a house, it's difficult to move because I think stamp duty is 5% now. So if you move, you're automatically paying 5%. And 5% on a 500 grand house is like, what is it? 25 grand or something? I don't know.
It's making the whole country way more static.
Yeah.
And also, there's the question of, or at least the counter argument of, well, does this really matter? Because really old people who have saved up loads of money through the housing boom that we've had over the last 30 years, well, they're just, they'll die and in their inheritance, they'll hand it off to their kids and then it'll trickle down. Thing is, that doesn't really work because by the time people die in this country, well, the money gets handed down to their kids who are in their, 50s.
Yeah.
And in which case...
yeah.
What are they going to use that for? Well,
so if you've been waiting till you own a house to have kids, which is what...
The Prince Charles effect.
It's what a lot of people do. They don't have kids because they can't afford... They don't have... they don't raise the kid in sort of insecure housing.
The one-bedroom house.
Yeah,
apartment, not house. What am I talking about?
Yeah, they don't have space. They can't afford. They can't afford to take the time off work because they've got to pay rent all the time. So yeah, if you're waiting till you're 50... to inherit that money.
And what does a 50-year-old couple do with some inherited wealth? Well, they put it towards their retirement, because why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so now we just have a circle at the top.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And also, they don't have any kids. We've got a generation without kids. Our fertility rate is like 1.7, so we're not having... I mean, I think the major channel for immigration into this country should be through women's vaginas, rather than...
That's the traditional method.
Yeah.
Rather than, the plane. But we'll go back to the article because there's some other cool stuff in there. They mention, for most of the 20th century, each generation managed to accumulate more wealth than the one before it. That process has completely stalled. While the wealth of the typical 60-year-old jumped from £250,000 to £360,000 in a decade, the wealth of someone in their early 30s has fallen. And they mention Lord Willetts, who wrote a book about all this. His book was actually written in 2011, so it's way out of date. It's even worse than he was writing. And one of the things he writes about is... sum-based pensions, which are a one-off, but we'll leave that for now. Another key reason is housing. At 30, little over a third of millennials are homeowners. When the baby boomers were 30, it was two-thirds of them were homeowners. One reason is affordability. The average first house was about twice the typical salary in the early 1990s. Haunted by the endless something happened in the 1990s. It's now six times higher, the article writes, and then doesn't investigate as to why. Just things happened. Something happened in the 1990s. Who remembers the 1990s, frankly?
I do.
I think, what?
Well, I remember
I thought you were all dead.
No.
It was an ancient time.
No, it's not even that long ago. I tell you what, it was better than now as well. There's better music.
Amazing.
Nobody was nagging you on Twitter. We didn't have diversity inclusion training. It was brilliant.
But people might know. It might not be lost after all. Maybe we could find the knowledge of what happened in the 1990s. Tom Harwood, I'm sure he'll be finding out. Data suggests that at the moment, it is only higher-earning millennials who are buying. The average full-time wage of someone in their 30s is £34,000 a year, yet the typical first-time buyer is on £51,000 a year, buying solo, according to Barclays. Mm. The average joint couple is £72,000. So, yeah, the very richest of millennials are the only ones even buying.
Right, yeah. So,
that's something to keep in mind. In London, where first-time buyers are buying homes that are nine times their salaries, hard cash is obviously needed.
Yeah.
People looking to get onto the housing ladder in the capital are putting down a deposit on average of £125,000.
That's a first-time buyer?
The first-time buyer.
Jeez.
You got £125,000 put down on a house?
Yeah, I do, actually. But I'm a bad example.
But who's a mental case? Who's like in their late 20s. In my early 20s. That's long gone. Who's got £125,000 to sit around? No one does. Like, yeah. Mum and dad have maybe got that, if you're a rich person in London. Mm. The issue for most millennials is that inheritance happens very late in life. The average 20 to 35-year-old is not expected to receive their inheritance until they're 61.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the whole question of like, but what if they get it from their parents?
It's yeah. Like, and I'm pretty sure when my dad dies, I'm going to get a bill.
Probably. Is that just a Scottish thing?
No. He was a gunsmith. He didn't accumulate wealth.
Oh, I thought it was just like, I'm going to screw over even my son. But they mentioned the Bank of Mum and Dad is a real thing. Apparently on average in a year, £7.4 billion are given out by the Bank of Mum and Dad to support property buying alone. So that's just Mum and Dad giving money to kids.
Yeah.
If the family were a real bank, it would actually be the 10th largest bank in Britain.
Jeez.
And, well, that might sound okay. At least the money's being transferred. You know, we don't need a state in that regard. And that sounds good. Unfortunately, the details in this are interesting. What's unusual about all of that is that it's only the rich parents giving it to their rich kids.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Pareto distribution,
yeah.
Most of the money is up near the top.
Yeah.
So, literally, it's just getting worse in that regard.
Mm.
Fantastic. They mention in here that also generational wealth disparities have led to similar systems in other countries, but not as bad as the UK, where 20% of under 35s at some point receive some money from their parents, whereas in France, Germany, and Italy, and the United States, it's pathetic percentages. It's nothing. It's very much a unique UK thing that our situation is that bad. The Bank of Mum and Dad are having to loan out so much just so their kids can even get a house.
Yeah.
Anyway. Moving on from that, because if we look at trading economics, this island is doing bad. It's going to get worse as well. This is trading economics. This is a website that just tracks data.
Right.
I like, because they do a good job of it. And in here, they have disposable income in the UK. And you might have noticed that it's completely flatlined in recent years.
Mm.
Whereas it should have been going up if, well, the trends of the past were to continue, as people thought they might with everything.
Yeah.
If you zoom in on this, it looks even worse. Because it actually is going down.
Yeah. Like,
if you just go to the next link, please. I've zoomed in for you. And you can see it. There you go.
Whoa.
Disposable income literally going down ever since, what's that, around about the lockdowns?
Yeah.
Yeah, surprise. Interesting. And then if you go to the next one here, there's also just the data that shows that things haven't really gotten better much since 2008. So, I mean, this is the weird generational thing, though, because you think, like, the millennials, who were told that life only really gets better over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the occasional bust. And they all went to university and all got their degrees and were told that's how you get a high-paying job. And then they went into the workforce in 2008 and all lost their jobs because you're the newbie. You're losing your job. I'm keeping mine. And then ever since, no real significant growth in the same way you would expect in the past. And in real terms, as the disposable income graph shows, things are only getting worse in the modern time. So, I mean, if you're Gen Z, kill yourself. I don't know. it's even worse because then the generational gap in terms of the housing devices I mentioned is way worse. And if we go to the next link here, you may have noticed that things have gotten kind of expensive.
Yep.
25% inflation since April 2020.
Whoa.
I don't know
if you
noticed
that, because like, remember if you went to the shops and there's a family pack of crisps and the standard sort of offer price was always a pound. When it was reduced and it was on offer, it was a pound. Kettle chips, whatever it is, Tyrrells, whatever, it's a pound. Now you go there, it is, I think it's £1.50, £1.25, something like that.
Everything is ridiculous. And the politicians obviously want to say, oh no, it's this, that and the other, and it's not. You printed loads of money.
Yeah.
You print loads of money, inflation go up.
Yeah, and also there's supply issues and production issues where we're not making enough stuff for all the people. Yeah,
but 25%.
Yeah,
across the board. Just your money is your savings are now down a quarter, and also your salary down a quarter.
Yeah,
thanks, Gov. Fantastic. And then if we go to the next one here, I just want to mention. I mean, that's the immigration stuff, and also the mismanagement of the economy. It makes me want to sink the country. But then there's the illegal stuff, which I just have to mention because this blew up recently, which is just a bigger symptom of, like, we are never going to deal with any problem if we can't even deal with this one. Local man went to church. Local man then gave speech in church. Local man upset lots of people. Let's listen to what local man had to say.
It's very telling that a lot of the conversation tonight seems to be around the hotel. But let's not beat around the bush, okay? Everybody, I think, can agree with me that the biggest concern is everybody's welfare and safety. Now, don't take us for fools when you say that these people are refugees. We know they are illegal migrants. If these people were refugees, what are they fleeing from? It's very telling that we're never told what they are fleeing from. What wars are they fleeing from? What countries are they coming from? What are they fleeing? What persecution? We don't know. So we know that they're by definition illegal immigrants, which technically makes them criminals, and they should be treated as such. They shouldn't be put up in five-star hotels. They should be in cells, and they should be told they are not leaving until they pay for their ticket back. So my question to you is, not where are you going to shift them to in a year's time, how are you going to remove them from the country? And don't give me an excuse that, oh, there's the UN refugee document that we signed, or there's the European Court of Human Rights. We voted for Brexit. This is supposed to be a sovereign country. You could easily withdraw from any of those agreements, but you don't. Your party has failed time and time again. In 2010, David Cameron said he was going to get immigration down. How did that work out? We've got higher levels than Tony Blair, and it was his intention to flood this country with migrants on purpose.
I cut it off there. He goes on a bit just to mention the other things that are wrong, but
yeah,
like I'm hammering the point too much. Eventually, the chair starts shouting him to shut up because how dare he? And I don't really care who local man is. I see some people whining about apparently he's this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
Did he say anything that was untrue?
Yeah, so yeah, apparently some people are claiming he's a far-right activist or something like that, which, I mean, to be honest, I don't see anything described in the media as anything but far-right. You know, everything is far-right.
Far right.
I mean, the other day, Prevent had Yes Minister, The Works of Shakespeare, and 1984 on their far-right watch list. And, you know, if those things are far-right, is anything not far-right?
Yeah, and the guy makes the obvious point. It was like, well, Brexit means responsibility. That's the only one glimmer of hope in all of this, which is that regardless of what you think of Brexit, the fundamental point there was sovereignty. Like, should we be able to control our own actions? But the flip side of that, that's far more interesting, is should we be able to blame our politicians when they fuck up?
Mm.
Because so often it was like, well, the EU's done it, so you can't blame me, and I can't do anything about it.
Mm.
And now, no, they have all the responsibility, all the power, and they're still effing up.
Yeah.
In which case, no. There is no more blame game. Like, this is definitely you who's done this, as the guy correctly points out. And we'll just go through the responses to that real quick, for time's sake. I did notice that a lot of people got mad and were like, how could he be saying this in a church? And then you look up their accounts and they're like, well, I don't believe in God.
And also they say Jesus wasn't a refugee. His family wasn't a refugee. Jesus' family never left the Roman Empire. So they weren't ever refugees.
I think he went to India. It's theoried at one point.
Really?
That's a theory. It's not proven.
But that was on holiday. That was a gap year. That was Jesus' gap year. So he still wasn't an asylum seeker.
He was in his early 20s at that point. So.
Right.
Yeah. So also the idea he's not white. I don't even want to get with that goddamn stupid conversation. It's just like, have you seen Bashar al-Assad and compared him to an Italian? Anyway, we'll go to the next one here. We have Otto Atheist, who is also mad. He's just like, in a church, a house of God. Well, I'm not religious. God, you fucking joke. Not the worst one, though. Some tard came out and was like, get the police! Because...
Oh, God, I know I know him.
You know him? I don't know. Man. He's like, keep an eye out for this one, Met Police.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then.
Oh, you little grass. Oh, my God. Teacher, miss, Billy said a bad word.
He said that the politicians are responsible for their actions.
Yeah.
Call the police.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, what did he say that was actually, I mean, oh, man, I hate this attitude in the left where they're like, they think the police, they think the state is...
They work for them.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm going to report these people to the police. Like, what do you think? If they create this structure where people can be persecuted by the state for expressing valid opinions, what do you think is going to happen when things flip and people on the right start persecuting the left? You know, you don't want to create these weapons.
Anyway, we'll go to the other news in this, which is the government have decided that not only are they looking stupid, but will continue to do so.
Yeah.
They're now deciding that 12,000 asylum claims will just be approved without any face-to-face interview now.
Wow.
I'm gonna go and meet them.
Wow.
These people are from Afghanistan, Eritrea, Libya, and Yemen, and Syria, which are certainly the countries you don't need to bother to go and check out.
Yeah.
If they're a terrorist.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
I mean, geez. The trouble is... I'm going to get into this in my section as well, but I mean, I'm all for immigration, you know, sensible immigration, like an Australian-style system where they take the sort of the best and the brightest from all around the world and cherry-pick them instead of just anybody who gets here. And
well, then, you may have committed terrorism, but you are here.
Yeah. You're from countries with high levels of Islamic radicalization. Come on in, we don't need to interview you.
You want to know what the reasoning is for this? So, why should we do this stupid thing? Well, it'll get rid of the backlog.
Yeah,
I mean it will.
So would
legalizing murder would stop murder, right?
So would letting all the criminals out of prison. It would get rid of over congestion in prisons.
I'm not joking either. Literally, they say the move aims to reduce the asylum backlog. The Home Office says this is not asylum amnesty.
Well, what is it then?
They don't back that with what it is meant to be. But
and like, why did they pick those nationalities?
Yeah,
like, I'd have thought if people are seeking asylum from I don't know Russia. China, where a lot of people are persecuted by the Chinese government.
North Korea, we probably don't need to interview you.
North Korea, places that don't have a tradition of trying to blow up pop concerts in the UK. You know what I mean?
Yeah, old traditions. Anyway, it could be worse. Could be Irish. I'll just end this off on a mood, being that if you're living in Ireland, you have our thoughts and prayers. This is a sports centre that suddenly had 150 Somalis moved in overnight. Local Irish people quite miffed. That all of a sudden that just happens to where they live. The next one here, just being the Deets in Ireland, another local managed to find a load of Georgian asylum seekers. But if you know anything about Georgia,
one of the best states in America.
Not that one.
But yeah,
there's no war, there's no political persecution, and it's on the other side of fucking planet.
Yeah, it's like it's like Albania. It's you'd have to come through so many safe countries to get here. But the reason they come to the UK is because it's far easier to have an asylum claim accepted in the UK because they don't even interview you. They're just like, oh yeah, come on in. You know
what are the locals up to though? Because I mean, it could all be peaceful, so you know, it costs some money, but who cares? Nah, it's not. They're fighting with each other in the centres. This is over the fact that the fighting age men, who are literally fighting in this case, are upset that the Ukrainian families who are turning up are being preferentially treated to them. So the way to solve that they are just as delicate a flower as a Ukrainian child is to fight with the... whatever. There's also the stabbings. You're the next one there. There's that, which, yeah, this is an asylum centre. Lovely. There's also been 37 risings in response all over Ireland. 37 hotels, which people have turned up and gone, bugger off.
Right.
Like, this is clearly a piss take.
Right,
which
is
featured on GB News. And as a response, the Irish government is now making it illegal to criticise it by making illegal aliens a protected class.
Oh my God. So this is... Hate crime law was originally designed to stop racism. Now it's being used as a political tool to silence any criticism.
You see, criminals are a racial group, and it's race hatred to be against criminals now, which I do you remember when Islamophobia became a thing and Christopher Hitchens made that point, like they use that word as if it's an accusation of race hatred.
So
I have race hatred against criminals. That's what the government in Ireland is saying needs to be stopped, which doesn't make any goddamn sense, because again, not on the basis of race, on the basis of crime committed.
I thought
that was obvious. Maybe it is, maybe they just don't care. But whatever. Rip Ireland. Rip this island. And I'm leaving. Screw this place.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely insane. I mean, my segment continues in a sort of similar vein. So this is an example of the UK actually not allowing somebody to return.
The one.
So Shamima Begum, her appeal to return to the UK has been overturned. There will be further appeals, though, I should imagine. So for a bit of context, so Shamima Begum was one of three East London schoolgirls who travelled to Syria in 2015 to support ISIS. There she is with her two school friends. It's a gap year that got a bit out of hand. Her parents are Bangladeshi immigrants who moved to the UK in the 90s. The 90s, that thing that happened in the 90s. And she was a student at Bethnal Green Academy in London. And she and the two schoolmates travelled to Turkey and then crossed over into Syria. And once there, she married an ISIS fighter, a Dutch convert to Islam, and had three.
He was a nice guy.
He had three children. I mean, that's it. I guess that's asylum seeking going the other direction. He wanted to seek asylum in the caliphate. She had three children while living under ISIS. All of her children died, sadly. And the two friends that she travelled with are also thought to be dead. Now, she plays down her role in ISIS now that she knows that it doesn't play that well with public opinion in the UK to be, you know,
it's
reveling.
It's not banging anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
More ways than one.
Yeah. It might have been seen as a good thing in Raqqa, but ISIS militancy not doesn't play so well in Surrey. But you can see in previous interviews, this is her talking about her involvement.
What was it about Islamic State that attracted you? What did you like about it?
The way they showed how you can go, they'll take care of you, you can have your own family there, you can do anything. You're living under Islamic law. Yeah.
Did you know what Islamic State were doing when you left for Syria? Because they had beheaded people, there were executions.
Yeah, I knew about those things, and I was okay with it at first because, you know, I started becoming religious just before I left. And, you know, from what I heard, that Islamically that is all allowed, so I was okay with it.
You didn't question that?
No.
So there, she says she knew about those things, like, you know, beheadings and things like that, and she was okay with it. And the next link says, she said, when I saw my first severed head, it didn't faze me at all.
I've got some sympathy, I've got to be honest. I'm not, you know.
She just reached the level of nihilism that
I'm
you've
not
got.
Saying that the EDs deserved it. I'm saying paedophiles, however, right. You know, if you saw them, yeah. You'd be like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think all the severed heads were from paedophiles. I think a lot of them.
No.
I don't think a lot of paedophiles were being like, I know where I'm going to go and commit some crimes.
No, that's not my point.
In the Islamic Caliphate, I think they'll be on board with it. I mean,
and for YouTube, my point is also not that you should do that. My point is that she's obviously coming at from perspective of like, well, if it's Islamically allowed, then it's okay. Like that's her worldview, right?
Right.
And like in the West, a lot of people would be able to say like, well, you know, if someone kills the nonce, like they wouldn't care about it. That's what I'm saying in terms of like why I can see she's not fazed by it.
Right.
Not saying that's right.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
Jihadism kind of dumb, but
yeah. Kind of. Well, anyway, in 2019, so 4 years after she went there, she was found by journalists in a Syrian refugee camp, and she expressed a desire to return to Britain with her children. Her request was denied by the British government on security grounds, leading to an international debate over her case. And then in February 2020, our tribunal ruled that removing Miss Bigham's citizenship was lawful because she was a citizen of Bangladesh by descent, so she had dual citizenship. So removing her British nationality wouldn't make her stateless, which is, you know, you're not allowed to do it. So I think I'm just British. I could join ISIS. They'd have to let me back. Probably. I don't know. I'm probably not going to join ISIS. We'll see how things go this year. But
come on. The Leo arc. Oh,
God. But yeah, the next tab just says, but what, Bangladesh turned around and be like, whoa, what are you doing? She's not coming back here. And she never was there in the first place. She was born in the UK, so
it's so funny that a Bangladesh are just like, whoa, not real Islam here. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
Aren't you a Muslim country?
Yeah, we're a Muslim country, but not that Muslim. You know what I mean? We're trying to keep things sensible. Lawyers for Shamima argued that the decision was unlawful as it did not consider whether she'd been a victim of child trafficking because she was 15 when she travelled. So in 2023, yesterday, in fact, the Special Immigration's Appeal Commission ruled that while there was a credible case that Miss Bigham was a victim of trafficking and sexual exploitation when she went to Syria in 2015, that didn't stand in the way of the Home Secretary stripping her of her British citizenship because she had subsequently become a threat. So she's now a threat. So the security threat overruled the mitigating factors of being underage and being trafficked. And this is important because it suggests that the precedent for asylum tribunals is to give more weight to the security of British citizens, which sort of goes against what you just discussed with, oh, we're just going to let everybody from Libya, Syria, all these places, they can just...
Until it's a big media story. Yeah. And they're like, we care about security.
Yeah. So they'll remove Shamima Begum's citizenship, but not the citizen. Not they won't stop
the other 14,000 we're about to just
not into. Yeah, and the left are predictably crying about it. If we go into the next tab, it's Otto English again. So he says, if Shamima Begum had been a wealthy white 15-year-old girl with a double-barreled name who'd made the same mistakes, she would not have been made stateless, and she would have been back home years ago. I don't think anyone would deny that. Well, I'd deny that, Otto English. If we move on to the next tab. Here we've got Jack Letts, a white British guy, born in the UK, English accent, all the rest of it, from Oxfordshire. He went and joined ISIS, and he's been stripped of his British citizenship as well, because he's got dual nationality with Canada.
So stupid as well. Like if someone had British and Russian citizenship,
yeah,
and the girl there joined the Ukrainian Kill Them All Brigade,
yeah,
and decided to go out and kill Ukrainians,
yeah,
and then was like, yeah, I want to come back. We're not going to let her back in.
Yeah.
Like, obviously not.
Yeah.
Otto just lives in his own world.
And leftists. So also, for a fact, asylum seekers or people returning from ISIS that don't have their citizenship revoked, that don't end up in jail, they're not getting housed. Next to Otto English, they're not getting housed next to wealthy Guardian.
From my iPhone,
wealthy Guardian columnists. They get housed in deprived communities who haven't asked for them, and I think that's unfair. I think we've now got the software, we've got experienced software that can identify right down to a pretty granular level the political affiliations and attitudes of different households. So why don't we place asylum seekers next to the Guardian readers who want them? That just seems then they're happy because they get more diversity, which is strength, and the deprived communities are happy because they don't get the negative effects, the social upheaval, grooming gangs, and all the rest of it.
There are three hotels in Swindon alone.
Yeah,
two of them very close to my house, so yeah. They're next to me. I'd happily send them all to Brighton. I think Brighton deserves them.
Yeah.
I think Brighton would love them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they can all have a conversation about LGBT rights.
And it's closer as well to where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Just need to
change
the trajectory so they hit that part of the coast.
Should we go to the northern coast of France to start handing out maps? Like, lads, don't worry. Still got a Dover.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, if we just alert people in the jungle camps at Calais that they might be coming to Swindon, it might put some of them off.
Yeah, that's
true,
actually.
When a return to Somalia.
Doing a leaflet
drop. But there are reasons to let her in, and I'm going to explain why we should let her in. So one of the reasons it's given to let her in is that she was trafficked by a Canadian spy across the border from Turkey into Syria. This is implying that the spy was an actual Canadian. It wasn't. It was this guy. It was a double agent called Mohammed Al-Rashid, who worked for both ISIS and Canadian intelligence. So he basically gave some intelligence to Canadian security services in return for a bit of money. So he's not Canadian. He's not, he's not a direct employee of Canada. He's Syrian, and so we can't really blame this one in the West. So this doesn't count as a reason to let her back.
I mean, they're trying to make it out like the Canadian intelligence services were the ones orchestrating her flight.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Like, Canadian guys with sharp suits and sunglasses. No, it's some guy who
I found another one, Shamina Bagum.
Yeah, some guy who occasionally got half a Bitcoin for giving some information. And the other reason, another reason to let her in on the next tab is that she was underage and she was groomed. The average age of women trafficked from the West by ISIS was 18. Shamima was underage at 15, and some have said that the average age of ISIS brides was actually lower than the white and the Sikh victims of grooming gangs in the UK. The average age of grooming gang victims is 12. It's still happening. The Maggie Oliver Foundation's annual report reveals it's currently working on over 50 live instances of child sexual exploitation cases. And this charity has also supported over 1,000 survivors of sexual abuse and exploitation through its legal advocacy and emotional support since 2020. So just in a couple of years. In 2022 alone, at least 400 survivors contacted the Maggie Oliver Foundation, having been failed by the police in some way. Obviously, some of them are, you know, more historic, but it's still happening. And 55% of cases from the last 3 years involve some form of sexual exploitation, with the average age for abuse to start being just 12 years old. I mean, Shamima, although, you know, the ISIS bride's been trafficked to Syria, a lot of them were above the age of, you know, criminal consent, criminal responsibility.
Yeah, which is
and
the
also
age of 10, I think
of consent. And
I don't get the idea they're being trafficked.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I don't really know whether that term's being applied here, because like they're going.
I can see that they're being groomed. Trafficked is, you know, it's a difficult one because they are sort of going of their own volition, but they're being groomed. They're being, you know, fed ISIS propaganda and all
yeah,
the rest of it.
But in my mind, I was comparing this to North Korea because there were a lot of Koreans after the war that went to North Korea because they were fed North Korean propaganda that was wonderful, and then they turned up and went, oh, bugger.
Can we go back?
We would never say that those people were trafficked to North Korea by the North Korean government.
They were lured.
Yeah, like they decided to go.
Yeah.
I mean, even people under the age of consent, they still went.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the fact that there's, you know, each stage of the journey, or not each stage, but, you know, from Turkey into Syria, there's a man assisting them over the border, and they need that assistance to sort of get in. They can't just, like, you know, there aren't that many just
buses. No, I mean,
buses.
The same was true in North Korea.
Yeah, like, yeah.
There was actually an organization that did that for you.
Yeah, and I guess just the age of them. But yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, from my point of view, she's underage, she's a victim of grooming, but in my opinion, this doesn't override the security concern. I mean, I'm sorry bad things happened to you, but now that you're, you know, in ISIS, just...
I mean, that's the unique thing, isn't it? Because if she was, let's say, groomed into North Korea and then left and went, I've made a terrible mistake and tried to come back, no one would have a problem because she's not a security concern.
Yeah, exactly.
But the UK is in such a bad state when it comes to Islamic terrorism.
Yeah.
Yeah, you is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. And another reason...
there's no North Korean terrorists over here.
No, there aren't. Sorry. There aren't. I mean, yeah, it's a cultural thing. It's a, you know, it comes from a certain religious doctrine. Mm. So... you know, we need to be aware of that and be careful. I'll get to that bit in a moment. Also, from a safety point of view, people say that the camp that she's in is insecure. But so they say she could get out of the camp, she could come over, you know, possibly as a cross-channel migrant, and, you know, then she's in anyway, so it'd be better bringing her back and knowing where she is. But if she's allowed back into the UK, there are still safety risks. She could escape prison, she could be radicalised further in prison, or she could radicalise others. And this UK government report into extremism in prison says, this study found that despite their small number, those convicted of Islamist extremist offences had a disproportionately disruptive influence in the prisons, exerting power and influence over other prisoners. So there's if she comes back, you know, left to say, oh, we can just put her in prison and it'll be fine. Number one, you know, they'll probably be able, lawyers could be able to stop her, find a loophole to stop her being arrested. She's not going to be in for, you know, forever. And also, in prison, she's still a danger. She can radicalise others. She can be radicalised further herself. So, you know, that's not a good solution. So that doesn't mean that we should let her in. The reason to let her in my opinion, is that, you know, she was made by the UK. So multiculturalism has pretty much... failed in the UK. I think a lot of immigrants, a lot of cultures integrate and just contribute hugely to the UK, not just economically but culturally, and that is absolutely fantastic. But we can't deny that multiculturalism has failed. There's malign outside influences. So
David Cameron said this 13 years ago, and it's not gotten any better.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, and there's Saudi Arabia. Funded madrasas, so Islamic schools around the world in non-Muslim countries, spent $75 billion funding these schools to sort of spread this real, you know, hardcore fundamentalist idea of Islam.
People to believe in Allah.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got. I think there's around 2,000 madrasas operating within the UK. So these are Islamic schools, and obviously, you know, most of the kids. There's 250,000 children attending these madrasas, and most of them, obviously, you know, not going to be terrorists or anything like that. But they are spreading this. They're getting funding. They're spreading this. You know, as any religious faith school would, spreading a certain mindset of the world, and can be targeted by people to sort of radicalize them further. And also, you know, obviously we've got lots of mosques in the UK where a paper by the International Centre of the Study of Radicalisation and Political Violence at King's College London described how after 2001, some mosques in the UK and elsewhere in Europe turned into magnets for radicalised individuals who would actively seek out these places in order to meet like-minded individuals or get involved in violent extremism. And we've seen, you know, hate preachers and everyone... linked to these places. So, you know, multiculturalism isn't, you know, just letting people keep their own culture is fine if that's just, you know, once a week I want to, you know, dangle some incense or whatever. But if it gets to the point where, you know, it's like, no, oh, we're spreading this thing where, you know, we're the chosen people and, you know, other people need to be executed, man, that's not a good... That's, you know...
That's just different types of curry. Then we just don't know what you're complaining about.
It's better to just have, you know, a culture where everybody's equal and tolerant and all the rest of it. The British values of equality and tolerance are pretty good, and they're also quite rare throughout the world. So I don't know if we want to, you know, dilute them down. And we can see this with, funnily enough, with the father of one of the girls. So if we move on to the next tab... So the father of one of the other girls that went over with Shamima Begum took her on marches where she was radicalised. Abbas Hussein, he denies he's an extremist after he was pictured at a flag-burning rally led by hate preacher Anjum Chowdhury outside the US Embassy in 2012.
I'm not an extremist, I'm a moderate.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I was probably there as well. But another person who was there was Michael... Adebowale, who was one of Lee Rigby's killers. That rally was, do you know what terrible thing that was against? It was against a controversial film. You know, it wasn't like protesting, you know, some invasion, you know, military invasion or something. It was protesting a film. Also, as you pointed out in yours, she can get in anyway. Cross-channel migrants, completely unregulated, obviously by the nature of illegal immigration. So what's the point in stopping one person when we have tens of thousands a year coming over? They're assisted by charities. There's an industry of human rights lawyers who know how to game the system. You get people who say they're Christian. I think the Liverpool maternity hospital bomber said, oh, I've converted to Christianity. So you can't send me back because I'll be persecuted for being a Christian. And he was just saying that because he knew that would mean that it ticks a box in the form. They can't send him back. He gets to stay. So they can pretend that they're LGBTQ as well. And I can't go back because I'll get stoned to death or whatever. And ironically, pretending to be LGBTQ is also what Western teens do at the moment. And asylum seekers have committed terror offences. So Al Swilmin, he was killed when his bomb went off inside a taxi at Liverpool Women's Hospital on Remembrance Sunday, whenever that was, 2022. So yeah, last year. He was an asylum seeker. He lied in an attempt to stay in the UK, and his application lacked basic facts about his home and the danger he faced, according to the documents. He arrived in the UK in 2014 and claimed asylum 6 days later. He claimed to be fleeing from his native Syria, which was then in the grip of a worsening civil war. But it was all untrue. People lie. And, you know, once you're in the system, it's very hard to send people back. Once you're here, people tend to stay here. Even if, you know, the worst outcome is, right, you've got to leave, then they just walk off down the street and it's like, you know, Nobody actually goes anywhere. The next tab shows that an asylum seeker posted ISIS propaganda on social media after that bombing at Liverpool Hospital. So this is Amiri Amedi Azizi from Sheffield. He shared the footage the day after the attack, and the video encouraged terrorist attacks against the West. The next tab has a suspect in an alleged terror attack that left a teacher and two others dead. And he was known to authorities. This was in Reading. He was a 25-year-old Libyan refugee. And I believe this was motivated by intolerance of LGBTQ people. Yeah. I believe that was
they
the motivation.
They come out of a gay bar.
Yes.
Yeah. I used to live there. So
right,
I actually know where they
went. And you went to that bar.
There's no thing there. There's no like little plaque saying where they were killed.
Right.
There's nothing.
Right.
It's really just weird.
that's because it could become, you know, the authorities always downplay these incidents because they're like, well, we don't want it to become the focus for far-right extremists. And bear in mind, far-right extremists now it's just
means
like... far-right
gay club.
Yeah, far-right. I don't think gay people should be beheaded. You know what I mean? Especially in the UK, which is supposed to be an open and tolerant country. But, no. What are you doing? That's far-right. That is impinging on the rights of people. Another one, Mohammed Mwazi, known as Jihadi John, was moved from
another moderate.
From Kuwait. Another moderate.
He's got the moderate stare.
This is another. There he is in his when he was modelling balaclavas for Next. And also, we know the asylum system is kind of a sham. Asylum seekers, a lot of them return home to the war zones that they're seeking asylum from on holiday. They go back and visit.
Yeah.
And surely if, you know, where you're from is so terrible and you're persecuted there, you can never go back, why are you going back on holiday?
I mean, people in the West don't know what war is. They don't know what a war-torn country means. No one knows anything.
Yeah.
It's like with the Ukrainian situation, and everyone says, oh man, it must be horrible. And then you realize there are Ukrainians going back. You're like, how can that happen?
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah.
Live in Lviv, like, it's just...
Yeah.
Like, you're not having bombs drop on you every single day.
Yeah, you're not anywhere near the front line.
You don't need to be in Warsaw. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. And, the worst example of how multiculturalism has failed us is that Britain is now an exporter of terrorists. So the Texas mosque shooter, synagogue shooter, was British-born Malik Faisal Akram. I don't think he actually shot anybody. He took four Jewish guys at the synagogue hostage.
I can't remember. But then I just remember his stupid accent.
He was shot. Well, you're going to hear it again because we've got the phone call between him and his brother, I believe it is.
Listen, I promise. No, it's not gonna. You want to read what is gonna and what ain't gonna, okay? I promised my brother when I watched him on that deathbed that I'm going to go down as a martyr. I ain't going to let no motherfucker suppress me. I'm surrounded by old mommy, right? Right? I'm in a synagogue. I've got four beautiful guys, Jewish guys with me, right? They're trying to play ball with me. I've told them, bring her here. She's got 84 years. They're talking to her because I'm near the prison, FMC Carswell. I'm bombed up. I've fucked every ammunition. I've only been here 2 weeks, right? I've got them all at gunpoint. I'm going to die. I've told them I'll release these four guys. I'll come on the yard. And I'll have a toe-to-toe with you, shoot me dead, shoot her dead. Because I'm dead and she's dead, she's 84 years, right? They f***ed her. So you know what? I've just rang you to say, yeah, if I said anything wrong to you, I'm sorry, I've told my kids to man up, don't cry on my funeral. Don't cry on my funeral, because guess what? I've come to die, G.
But you're not coming.
I'm going to heaven, brother.
You're not coming.
I prayed for Allah for 2 years for this. I'm telling you. Either you come for it or they send it. I'm going back home in a body bag.
I'm telling you.
I know what I'm doing, Yerah. I'd rather live one day as a lion than 100 years of a jackal.
By you dying.
Yerah, who gives a f***? Listen to me. Allah said, I've asked Allah for this death, and guess what? Allah's ready. And Allah's with me, man. I'm not worried the slightest. I don't even flinch, man.
All right,
Yerah, you don't need to do this. Why
I think we heard
this?
Enough of that. So that's him. That's his attitude.
I just finished baked beans and then we'll go heaven.
That's somebody who's born in the UK and you know that's they grew up. They're infused with those values.
That's definitely a UK-based terrorist
in the UK. Yeah. So basically, I don't know. Like, there's over 43,000 potential terrorists in the UK being watched by MI5. So MI5, they're aware of more than 43,000 people who pose a potential terror threat to the UK. That's twice the number of terror suspects previously disclosed. And after the this includes 3,000 so-called subjects of interest who are under active investigation, as well as 20,000 who had been investigated in the past who might engage in terrorism in the future. And it includes terrorists. I mean, the 20,000, the ones that are just under, you know, monitoring, less serious monitoring, still very dangerous guys. So they include terrorists such as Salman Abedi, who went on to kill 22 people in the Manchester Arena suicide bombing.
There's 40,000 of them.
Well, yeah, 43,000. 43,000. And it's, you know, so this is a huge problem. I mean, that's an army. You know what I mean? It's insane. So what I'm saying is we need to allow Shamima back because it's a nonsense. It's like, you know, a drop of water in a swimming pool compared to the problem.
It would make no goddamn difference.
All it is is a publicity stunt for the government to say, oh, look, we're doing something. But meanwhile, you know, 43,000, nothing happening. And also we need to stop monitoring jihadists. We need to stop. The security services are monitoring these 43,000. Look, the British people have made a choice that they want this culture. They want jihadis to be able to come here. They want this culture here. They want it to engender and proliferate in the UK.
So why are we oppressing these innocent people?
So why, if the British people, they need to be properly informed, so don't hide the consequences from them. Don't hide, don't stop the activity of these people on these watch lists. And then, you know, maybe the British people might decide, well, if they don't want beheadings and explosions at pop concerts and all the rest of it, they might think of a better solution than having thousands of police watching them. It seems a nonsense. You wouldn't vote for tigers, to fill your house with tigers, and then have to pay somebody thousands of pounds a week to
stand there with a taser
to stop the tigers biting you. There's a better solution than that. But the main reason that Shamima Begum should come back is that she's fit now. She's had a glow up, not a blow up. She's had a glow up, and she looks proper fit. I mean, are you telling me you wouldn't tap that? She's the perfect trad wife for you, Callum. She's got nice traditional beliefs. She believes in the nuclear family.
She'd get along with the Taliban.
Yeah, she'd. and she'd be happier with less. So if you provide, all she wants is a household with just some food and no beheadings. That's an improvement on what she has.
Yeah, some beheadings, I think.
In Raqqa. She could also go on Love Island. We've got an artist's impression of what she'd look like on Love Island.
You know, I bet the TV industry would actually do that if they got the option.
Yeah, you know what?
They're for the ratings.
Yeah.
Man, they're so desperate.
She'd be in Celebrity Big Brother.
Oh.
Yeah, or that, what's the one in the jungle where they have to eat bugs and stuff?
I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here.
Yeah, I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here.
She'd
probably win.
I was the health minister of the UK. How about you? Oh, I tried to kill people. Kind of celebrity.
Yeah. I mean, is there much difference between, I guess the health minister of the UK probably killed more people more successfully. Anyway, that's why I think Shamima should return.
On a final note, we shall talk about diversity face. So we've talked about blackface or womanface or any of the other faces which have been discussed, but I'm here to talk about the diversity face, because diversity face is far more interesting and also something we're dealing with in real time. Mm. And this comes back to Matt Walsh, who decided to come out and give a statement where he decided to say that, well, maybe the person doing womanface isn't a woman. That's why they're doing woman face. Otherwise, why would they be doing woman's face?
Mm.
And, well, he made an argument about that. That was very Rome Total War-esque. Got in some comeuppance from people. Trigonometry got a dispute with him about this. Or, like, you're being rude and mean and not winning people over. And Matt was just like, go to hell, don't care. And gave his reasons. And you can go check that all out in your own time. But that's not the point of the segment, which is, if we go to the next one, we can see the individual in question. This is the most favourite TikTok of theirs. Because, I mean, it's the most woman-faced one.
Now, this is what all women are like. This is genuinely what all... Have you ever seen a woman that doesn't act like this? Oh, look, there's a bug. I'm going to fall over.
Yeah, I have.
Really?
Yeah. There's a few of them.
I just thought this.
I mean, this is the whole funny thing about the trans movement, where you want to wear a massive dress every day and look as feminine as possible.
You telling
women don't do that?
You telling me? Yeah, you telling me this isn't a real woman?
No, and Matt Walsh got in trouble for saying that and saying it was demonstrable. And there was a great point raised by Sean, actual justice warrior, who is a good guy, because someone mentioned, why is one fake but the other not? Because it's a fad that's going to end up being a huge mistake for so many people. Okay. Interesting note. But Sean mentions, more interestingly, why is Dolezal, who by all accounts was a good activist for the NAACP, totally fair game to be mocked and attacked relentlessly? Meanwhile, Dylan over there, who is playing up the most negative stereotypes of bimbo period-obsessed harlot, completely off-limits. He's completely right. I hadn't even thought of it in that regard.
It's because the left are misogynists.
Well, they're anti-white. It's fundamental there.
Yeah.
They also do hate women, that is true. But I don't know if you've seen the other stuff from Dylan. I don't know how familiar you are. But he got a sponsorship from Tampax.
Right.
To put...
Where?
In his anus, I presume. Maybe some bullet wounds. Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah.
He was mentioning he's been walking around with them in his purse for years.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
But no.
Because even like women, like I do know some women, and they don't carry Tampax as a like, this is an expression of my femininity.
It's a fashion accessory.
They carry them because they sometimes bleed. So it's a practical thing rather than a...
I mean, Dylan does live in America. Maybe he'll get shot and walking around an American high school or something.
Right,
and then
he'll
need it. You know, I think that's what the original purpose was for.
Yeah.
I may be wrong. This may be big bunk. Someone told me.
You implying that Dylan could possibly be in a school?
Well, I'm just saying he lives in America.
That sounds like you're
just
implying...
Just American schools are full of guns.
Implying Dylan is maybe a slight nonce.
I don't know, but he keeps getting invited to all kinds of events. He got invited to the White House, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, so. That was a big warning sign.
But I don't know if that's true. Someone correct me in the comments whether or not. I got told, apparently, tampons were made for bullet wounds originally. And they're like, hang on a minute.
Really?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. But great point raised by Sean, though, which is that one of them is completely off limits to mock.
Yeah.
And the other one is completely on limits to do whatever the hell you want with.
Yeah.
Take that
and if you mock, then you're being a transphobic bigot.
And I can prove this, because if we go to the left-leaning outlet, the Daily Beast, not the Blaze. What am I talking about? We can see here, race faker Rachel Dolezal, new side hustle, OnlyFans.
I saw these pics. You wouldn't believe. Like, she doesn't look that fit there.
Like, the chat.
She doesn't look that fit. But she genuinely, she's got like a, it's like the Nancy Pelosi effect. It's like you wouldn't think, and then the Norks, oh my God, where did they come from?
My friend, you're being tricked by the camera.
No, we'll show some pics.
I'm not showing the pics.
I'm going to Google Rachel Dolezal naked right now. I've seen them.
All right,
I remember being like, you know, like almost Ben Shapiro's sister level.
No, no one's being that, come on. Anyway, so they're saying here, yes, that same Rachel Dolezal who tried to catfish the world as the head of the Washington chapter of the NAACP, claiming she was black, when in reality, she's a white woman who wears blackface and teases her hair to mimic an afro to apparently look the part. This is Rachel Dolezal, who adopted African-American vernacular to try and make her persona more believable. The same woman who made the word transracial part of our vocabulary. You can feel the bitterness in the writing, like, what a stupid moron, horrible person, how could she do this?
Yeah.
Thing is, rewrite those lyrics into Matt Walsh's vocabulary, and we get, yes, the same Dylan Mulaney, who tried to catfish the world as an attractive woman, claiming he was a woman, when in reality he's a white man, who wears woman face and teases his hair to mimic a woman, apparently to look the part.
Hmm.
It's the same goddamn thing. It's the same goddamn subject, which is, what if I believe in my head I'm something else? And while Rachel Dolezal is always completely in the right, no one has been able to solve this contradiction. It has been going on forever, and there's a few more examples I want to go through.
Well, and also Rachel Dolezal wasn't coming out and giving the most cartoonish sort of racist stereotype of what a black person would be like.
Oh God, could you imagine if she did?
Yeah, she's like,
oh no.
She's all like, she, you know, like, you know, all this sort of stuff.
We need our money, Howie.
Whereas Dylan is genuinely coming out and being the most sort of offensively grotesque caricature of a woman, and totally not like, you know, there's plenty of trans women who just look like women and pass as women.
So all the
Dylan doesn't pass as a woman because no women's all like, eh, there's a bee, I'm gonna fall over, you know what I mean?
I mean, all we've learned is the transracials just need to take it 10 times more stereotyped.
Yeah.
I mean, the next one's gonna get even worse.
Like,
the
they need to pretend they're in a 1970s blaxploitation film.
So there's this Indian guy in 2015 who pretended to be black to get into medical school, and it worked.
Right.
in case you're wondering.
Was it Mindy Kaling's brother, did it say just there? If you scroll up.
He just shaved his head.
So Mindy Kaling from The Office The Office and wrote Scooby Doo.
And he's like, I shaved my head. I am now a black man.
Right,
I'm no longer Indian.
Amazing.
My brother.
Yeah. And did he use any like Justin Trudeau?
I don't think
style?
He needed to, because Americans don't know what Indians really are.
Right. So
they're just like, you know, brown people. Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I've got a mate from Sri Lanka, and he's like, you know, if you shaved his head,
if you got brown skin, Americans just can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
They just don't know what the rest of the world is. So they say here that he poses as a black man to get into medical school, and it worked. On his website, almostblack.com, which is an amazing website, he says that he hatched the plan in 1998 after realizing in college that his grades weren't actually good enough to get into medical school as an Indian American.
Whoa.
But as a black American, they were.
Mm.
So he did 22 applications, got interviews for 11, and offered places at 4 universities, including an Ivy League one. They were just like, you're black.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. I totally am.
Did he actually say that he was black, or did he just leave it inferred?
I think he left it inferred for all of them. Like,
beautiful.
He didn't explicitly say it.
Yeah.
But he did put on a voice. and pretend to be.
Can you do that voice, Callum?
No, I don't think he turned up and was just like, "What's up?" And no, he didn't. He didn't do that. I don't know. Maybe he did. I mean, that's the whole point about the racial stereotype. What he's wearing his trousers. I don't know, way too down, showing off his boxes in the interview.
Yeah.
Did you see Don Lemon? No. Recently, Don Lemon. He did a segment in 2013, right, detailing what the black community needs to do to improve itself.
Right.
Whew, not allowed today if he did it, but he did it on CNN 2013. Right. And it was just like, pull up your pants, stop littering, stop having children out of wedlock. And it's like, hey. So
it's also good advice for white teenagers in the UK.
Yeah, but it's not allowed to be said of black youth in the modern age on CNN, which would get in big trouble.
Yeah.
But if this guy did do more racial stereotypes, I mean, probably would have. How would they call him out? They couldn't call him out, could they? I just go full balls to the wall. I don't know. Start walking in. I don't know how far you can go before they're like, hang on a minute, this is just pure offensive. But I mean, Dylan Murphy walking around going, ooh, a bug, is the equivalent of this Indian guy walking in an interview with a bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
I'm not going to laugh. That is entirely what that is.
It's a deeply offensive caricature.
And if we go to Spike.com, they have a whole bunch more. In 2020, there were a bunch of Canadians who came out as transracial. So it's almost like it was not environment. Sorry, not genetic, but environment that caused this. Morning Star Bear is the name of Carrie, who decided to rename themselves. They chose to express her indigenous identity. Carrie over here, a professor at Saskatchewan University and one of Canada's top health experts, had spent years claiming to have First Nations heritage, but it has now been outed as a bog-standard white Canadian. Oh no, the worst thing ever. Being white.
Yeah. Well, it is when there's systemic bias against you, like with the Indian guy who knew that, or Indian heritage guy who knew that he wouldn't be able to get into the university as an Indian guy because the cards were stacked against him.
Literally. So one of Carrie's colleagues, who is herself from a First Nations background, we don't have any evidence for that, we're just believing. Presumably that person is also playing the game, because it became suspicious when she noticed that Carrie started walking around wearing traditional looking clothes all of a sudden. Particularly when appearing in public, which is really funny. Could you just anything else? Like you just, I'm Indian now. Start turning up in saris. I mean, it is like the black guy in America who's like, I'm a Muslim now.
Yeah.
I'm changing my name to Muhammad, and walking around with a little box on the head, and it's just like, you. No Muslim respects this, my friend. They all know the Nation of Islam is a joke. It's not a real organization in Islamic schools. However, she also noticed that Carrie had started claiming to have two additional First Nation ancestries all of a sudden, you know, because that's how you find out as you wake up in the morning. Earlier this year, Susie Kears, a co-chairman at the Canadian Liberal Party Indigenous Peoples Commission, had to resign under the same circumstances. A Radio Canada investigation was unable to confirm her claims that she had First Nations background, and one researcher said that she had no Indigenous ancestral background going back seven generations. She was in charge of the Indigenous Peoples Commission.
So she's basically Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, literally. Except she went even further because she continued to speak on behalf of First Nations people, even though... Okay. Most infamously in 2019, she got a library to find a load of its books offensive, and then the school board eventually pulled thousands of those books from the shelves because it offended her, even though she's Rachel Dolezal, of the Canadians. The Indians over there. And they then started a flame purification ceremony in which 30 of the books were burnt.
What?
Because oh my it offended God. The Indian community of Canada.
Were any of those books a history of the Nazis?
I don't know.
Jeez, that is...
What the Nazis did wrong, burn it.
Yeah.
US Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren.
I mean, that is just... I just can't believe people do, obviously...
Like
you know,
the evil thing.
Yeah.
I remember in America there was some lady, she was trying to teach the history of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So she divided the class into Jews and Nazis and then had the Jews dig their own graves and then had the Nazis execute them into these fake graves.
Oh.
And all the kids were crying.
Of course. What on earth?
Funniest thing though.
Yeah.
Because like, why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do that? I mean, obviously we'd do it. But why would a normal person?
But she was like, why would a... she tried to defend it by being like, well, I'm Jewish. And it's like, what? She wasn't, by the way.
She wasn't. No. She wasn't even...
Anyway.
Jeez, maybe she was a Nazi.
Elizabeth Warren also claimed to be Pocahontas, as Donald Trump put it.
Yeah.
Was forced to take a DNA test and reveal that, no, she is indeed an Indian. A 1 in 1,024th.
Yeah.
So, not.
No, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of other parts there. 1,023 parts, but they have that rule with I think in New Zealand and Australian stuff and in America it's like the one drop rule. So even if it is just the tiniest fractional bit, then you count as as First Nations.
But that's a lot of diversity face that we've known about.
Yeah,
and now I have to finish it off with the newest one, which is my actual favourite.
Yeah,
let's go
people
to the next.
Pretend to be Scottish.
No. This Dino over here of a woman. Is like, I'm not white. I'm everything.
Yeah.
By the looks of it.
I am an advert in 2023.
Yeah, she is literally like, well, we need someone to star in this cover that we're going to put on bus stops. This woman is what it is. Race faker called out by her own mum, who said she's as white as snow. She's a lot of fake tan, yeah. By the looks of it.
Have they got any pictures of her before she...
No,
transitioned.
No, they contacted the mother, and the mother, if we can scroll up to that middle one, and we'll keep it stuck on that one with the flag, because I think that is just the best one ever.
Yeah.
You can see the little Allah al-Akbar necklace she's wearing, because she's a Muslim. Yeah, okay. A diversity officer, that's her job.
Right.
She's a diversity officer.
Of course.
I was like, well, I have to look the part.
Yeah.
Dress for the job you want. Black up. She allegedly told colleagues she was Latin, and South Asian, and Arab.
All at once?
Yeah.
Right.
As well as being trans queer,
oh,
by the
God.
Looks of it. I'm not even joking, that actually does come up later.
Right, yeah, yeah. Interesting, so my ex was, she's like half Scottish and half sort of Afghan origin Indian, so like, you know, a bit of a mishmash, but she, this is in 2020, she changed her photo on LinkedIn to be more... You know, more ethnic looking, because she said this is gonna help me get jobs.
Yeah, well, it works.
Yeah,
and well, this lady, it totally did. This is before I think John just found.
No way.
Which she's got a little like, what is that? Is that like is that a dream catcher for earrings? The Indian thing.
Oh yeah.
And then she's like, actually, I'm a Muslim now, and now I'm gonna dress up as an Asian, and now I'm gonna dress up as a Latin American.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, not even Latin American, just Latin. But it's comical, the level of makeup as well.
Most women in Glasgow make themselves that color anyway, just through sunbeds and fake tan.
Essex. Raquel Sawawisti, I'm just gonna call her Raquel because I can't say that.
Yeah.
A chief inclusion officer at Philadelphia-based Quaker Group American Friends Service Committee, of course, has been accused of cultural vandalism by putting on makeup. I don't think there's any culture being... I think our self is being vandalized. I don't know what else. We're going to the source article at The Intercept, because they have the full deets, because they called up the mum.
Yeah.
And we're like, hello, your daughter. Pretty white, am I right? And the mum went, yeah. Quote, I don't know why she's doing what she's doing, said the mother. So presumably they're not on speaking terms. Mum, you don't respect me. Just want to bring it back to Dylan. Just keep that in your mind.
Yeah.
Raquel over here, her mother added, is British, German, and Italian descent, not Latina, South Asian, or Arab. She's got zero of those identities anywhere near her. I mean, I know Italians are basically black, but she didn't claim to be black.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's not that. Perrone noted her daughter had converted to Islam in high school. I'm sure a very sincere conviction of religious belief in Allah, not because I want privilege.
Yeah.
I'm 100% sure. And at some point, she seemed to have felt the need to portray herself as having a different ethnic identity.
Yeah. Probably around the point that white people started being demonized and other races elevated above them by leftists.
It's because she wanted a privileged position in life, and we can literally prove it.
Yeah.
Keep it on this image, John, as I read, because you may notice some oddities in that image. I'll let you say, spot it. Oscar Pierre Castro, a human resource professional, helped participate in the search for the committee to fulfill her position to get the diversity officer, so they were looking at the diversity officer, told The Intercept that she had presented herself as a queer Muslim ethnic multicultural woman.
Right.
She literally turned up with the meme of like, I'm a queer Muslim. Ask the Quran about that. Also, I'm multicultural, multi-ethnic. even though she has none of those. She could have turned on me like, well, I'm multi-ethnic because I'm British, Italian, German. No, no, she instead, because those don't exist. Those are essentially just the same thing, which is white.
Mm.
I mean, nothing. But the rest of the world, that's not all just brown. We don't do that. Instead, we play this game of, oh, no, it's multi-things at once, but the other one isn't.
Mm.
Okay. The leader of the Quaker group said that he had been impressed by her credentials and charm, and that he thought she would be a good fit for the diversity and inclusion role because it seemed that there was an element of lived experience. Again, the qualifications in question for getting a job were, are you brown enough? And she was like, I'm three brown. I'm brown in three places.
Yeah.
Okay. And also in religion, because Americans apparently just think Islam means brown.
Mm.
I think she does as well. Castro added, in my mind, it was great. A person of color. A queer person of color. Who happens to be a Muslim. It's a woman. All of these things. And someone who seemed to get it. I definitely feel conned. Yeah, you deserve it. The diversity queen herself, the woman here, released a statement. In which she says that, well, the organization I work for doesn't require that any employee prove their heritage as a condition for employment in order to be a valued member of the team. So she's doubling down on going, so what? You can't fire me for it.
Yeah.
And she's not wrong.
Yeah. She's found the loophole.
I'm a queer Muslim Arab. And what are they going to do? Say no? Prove it?
Yeah, they can't. You can't like lift her up and see what the markings are on her. Underneath her.
I mean, like, I'm in saluting because I'm in awe.
Yeah.
Like, salutes in the chat. I actually have no animus against this woman at all. She is my new queen.
And maybe this is how we defeat it with malicious compliance. Like Kayla Lemieux, the big boobed teacher in Ontario. If everybody goes in and says, yeah, I'm trans, if everybody goes in and says, yeah, I'm a Muslim genderqueer Arab, then...
The best one's bisexual because you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I got a wife.
Well, queer. You don't need to do anything either. There's, like I said, there's all these comedians who are
non-binary.
I'm queer. I'm non-binary. I'm gender fluid, and it's like all those things just mean you're white, basically.
Yeah. The concerns about Raquel, however, includes by some of the members of the organization that she has a hidden political agenda.
Mm.
In an anonymous letter posted on Medium that The Intercept has confirmed is from those members, they noted that after 9/11, all of a sudden, Raquel became a conservative and started appearing in Islamophobic spaces, they write, such as Fox News, Huckabee Show, as you can see there. American Muslim activist and writer. Why would she do that? She went on right-wing TV shows, they write, where she was presented as a moderate Muslim critic of Islamic extremism.
Mm.
She was literally the moderate Muslim meme. You remember that? It was like, well, we got to listen to the moderate Muslim. We have a white woman who's played dress-up. And this you could see it there. This is on Fox News, 2014.
Yeah.
And they had her on a lot, by the sounds of it, because they kept having her on. And as she presented herself as a moderate, whilst changing her political views is not unheard of, Raquel has also not publicly addressed her work from those years and appears much of it has been scrubbed from the internet by herself. She's not proud of those years. Sounds to me like someone's just playing the game. And I can't even be mad at someone just playing the game.
Yeah.
Because, hey, hate the game, not the player. Quote, imagine the trauma of people who confided in her, trusted her, and shared sensitive information about their work and their lives, thinking that she was a fellow person of color, said the leader of the organization, referring to Raquel. And now all of a sudden, it's a white woman. Oh no, with a right-wing history, it's scary. What are you? These people deserve it. This organization deserves it.
Yeah.
All those people. If you're sat there being like, "Well, I can't trust one of those damn whites," and then a whitey plays dress up.
They've created a system that can be exploited. It's like the gender reform bill in Scotland. They say, "Oh, anybody who says they're a woman is a woman," and people are like, "Wait a minute, won't that mean that then somebody can say, like, somebody who's convicted of rape can say they're a woman and get into women's prisons?" And they're like, "No, that'll never happen." It'll obviously happen because you create a system where it can happen. Same thing. They've created a system where they lift up, you know, marginalized communities, whatever they seem, the only marginalized community seems to be
the global minority.
Yeah. So, but there's no way of, like, you don't need to provide a blood sample or anything like that. So obviously people are going to exploit it. They're going to be like, those things that you say are better and you're going to reward more. I'm those things.
I mean, if I need to go to another job, I've got the Afghan uniform at home. I'm just going to turn up and be like, I'm Pashtun.
And you've got the beard as well.
What are they going to do about it?
Yeah.
And you'll be wrong. And if you want to say that this is someone conning or whatever, I don't even care. Literally, there's no way of getting back at them.
Yeah.
The system is set up explicitly against them, so they have to, like, I don't know. People used to complain about back in the day you had to pretend to be white or something. The exact opposite is now and alive and has been for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Just going through the examples I gave. And good luck to them. Not even mad. And people who are playing that game, I mean, we can talk about Conscious Points of Philosophy Tube another time, but in the trans community, there is, yeah, it's not a surprise that you can replace the words with all the vitriol the left has against transracialism.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a Matt Walsh speech. And, well, what's the truth of the matter? What do you think it is? Nonsense is nonsense. It always is.
Yeah.
That's that. Go to the video comments if we have any.
A popular burger restaurant in Oakland, California will have to pay $20,000 to a former trainee. This person was upset that their coworkers misgendered them, and it's unclear if they made their preferences known, as management kept telling them to inform the others. Apparently, California has a law that you must use preferred pronouns at work, which even I didn't know. Stay compelled speech. After running to the Civil Rights Department, punishment was handed down. Message received, never hire these people because you'll have to fire everyone else.
Don't do business in California is also what I've learned from that. Never start business there. Although it's Shake Shack, so screw them.
Yeah.
I don't like Shake Shack.
Yeah, they're overpriced like all those newfangled burger places. But yeah, I've noticed all the pronoun people cause trouble at work. And I think we all know
it's like it's their personality.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think anybody who hires... anybody with pronouns in their bio or anything like that.
Get what you deserve.
Yeah, you know
pay
what you're getting.
Pay the pronoun tax.
Yeah.
20 grand, buddy.
Yeah. They're just going to come in, not do any work, and moan about stuff, and moan about and accuse people of being racist.
The next one.
My eyes are not once looking towards the camera through this entire recording. That is thanks to NVIDIA's new AI-driven eye-tracking software that makes it so my eyes look at the camera, which is up there. My eyes are actually looking down here, right? You will see my eyes glitch out once in a while. Let's see if I can make it happen. Whoop. We'll see. We'll see that in the playback. But isn't technology interesting? You never know what you're going to see is real or not.
It's mad.
Yeah, I saw a lot of streamers have been using that.
Right, yeah. So it means you don't need to use a teleprompter.
Yeah, but it's because it's not really that great, it's not there yet. Like,
right,
maybe
yeah.
In like 5 years, you won't have to use a teleprompter.
Yeah. But I've got a teleprompter. I thought that gave me some sort of edge.
Well, in 5 years, it'll be the waste of money. So sell them now. Short them. Short teleprompters. That's not financial advice. Go to the comments. Dr. Ziggy says, good to see you back, Leo. It's been quite a while since you're on the podcast. Hope Light's been treating you well.
Thanks, Dr. Ziggy. Yeah, it's been good. I had a baby.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, didn't you become a dad?
Yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, man, it's great. Yeah. Like, she's like 4 months, 4.5 months now. So... she's great. She's like laughing and just, it's the best time. You know, for the first few weeks or whatever, you're just sort of scared and she's like small and look, you know, you're worried you're going to break her in some way. But now she's, you know, she's really bouncing all over the place and laughing and playing.
I always thought that. I imagine it's like being given a porcelain elephant for a little while and then just after a while they're then like, okay, it'll be fine. Just leave it there.
Yeah. Yeah, but they do become like strong.
So on letting the island sink. Based Ape says, based churchman, sounds like your average lawyer here. Based churchman, if you're listening, good job. I'm proud of you. Anything in that speech wasn't incorrect. So, yeah, anything said there is fine.
Yeah.
Shake Silver says, thank you, UK, for being an example for the rest of the world. It's what an unfettered, unstoppable, neoliberal and progressive policy does to my country. Yeah, glad we could be the guinea pig. Selling out our future, the local populace, in order to continue to reward the already wealthy elites as a global vassal.
Yeah. But it's coming to every country soon. Look at Scotland, look at Ireland.
There was some, I hate them, London Tories. I don't know what it is about them, especially like the Westminster London Tory types. I'm not talking about the MPs, I'm talking about the goddamn activists in that city. Because one of them made this post, and it really annoyed me, where she's like, oh, me and my Tory friends at the pub, why are you a Tory? Look at us, we're right wing. And all of the reasons given were basically just so I can be a migrant capitalist. I was just
Have, because I've accumulated land or wealth, I can be a rentier capitalist, bring no productivity to the economy, no innovation to the economy, just...
Yeah, they were all just like migrant rich kids.
Right, yeah.
They were just like, well, I want that to continue because it worked well for me.
Yeah.
Well, I bet it does. Look at you in London. Freewill212 says, you won't get sensible levels of anything when the policy is decided by ideology or greed, but, you know, what's the solution? Well, no, I don't agree with that. I think some ideological presuppositions do actually succeed in achieving what they want. I mean, like, socialism succeeds in getting what it wants, which is everyone dead.
Yeah.
It's true.
And Australia, it's got a great immigration system where you apply, it's based on points, so, you know, they get the sort of the best people and the people that are going to contribute the most. And if you try and get there illegally, then you automatically revoke your right to ever become an Australian citizen.
On the illegal stuff, the Australians have got it right. On the points idea, like, that's fine. Mm. And that's the reason we copied it. One of the things that people seem to ignore going into that debate was that Australia has much higher levels per capita of immigration.
Yeah.
Because it's useful for them. Yeah. They've actually got all this friggin' land.
Yeah.
Nobody lives.
Yeah.
And, well, some people in it. Yeah. But the UK don't have that.
Yeah.
So when we copied that idea, and everyone just assumed it'll be great, it was like, there are some differences there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about, you're right about the points are great, the illegal aspect's great, but on the level of numbers of people, no one seemed to think that through for some reason.
Yeah.
So, but that's fine, because you can just, with the point system, you can just up the points you need.
Yeah, but then economists and politicians are saying, well, we need massively high levels of immigration because people in the UK aren't having enough kids. And it's like, well, people in the UK would have more kids if they could afford a house to raise a family in.
I just hated it. Who will pick the vegetables? The robots. We live in the robot age.
Yeah,
you ever seen a combine harvester?
Yeah, we don't even need journalists anymore. We've got ChatGPT. What do you think I wrote my segment using?
I just hate that I saw some people talking about that. Seriously. Like, who will work the farms? And it's like, well, Who goes out there and cuts the wheat?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
A guy in a combine harvester cuts the wheat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Colin P says, sent them to the UK's version of Martha's Vineyard. Brighton, in my assumption.
Yeah.
North Islington, maybe. I don't know. Just skip through some of these. So Lee Frenchman says, houses, come on, man, lower your expectations. Soon you'll need popcorn soon it will be the popcorn you need to enjoy the coming collapse. Will also be too expensive. Yeah. Go and Shemina be gone.
So AZ Desert Rat says, they'll take care of you and your family. That's a strategy used by street gangs in the USA. Join us and we'll take care of you. Then they're caught in a cycle of violence and fear. He's talking about ISIS there. Omar Awad says, they'll overlook actual terrorists claiming asylum, but Christians legitimately fleeing persecution get rejected because it might inflame community tensions. The only thing the government prevents is common sense. Totally agree. It's and around the world, Christians are very persecuted group.
Well, I think, do you know the case he's referencing? Because I think he is.
No.
There was a Pakistani girl. She was alleged to have drunk from a cup that belonged to a Muslim. So the penalty was death.
Right.
We were offered to take her and her family. And Theresa May intervened personally to say no.
And what happened to the girl?
She ended up going to, I think it was Australia or something she had to go to. She wasn't allowed to the UK.
That's absolutely insane.
The Prime Minister herself came in and said no.
Yeah.
And the official reason given was that it would inflame community tensions because there are so many Pakistanis in the UK.
That's not a good reason.
No, it's not.
That is not a good reason.
It's a good reason to step down on those radicals in the Pakistani community.
It's a good reason to make a stand and let her move here.
If you're Pakistani in the UK, you need to accept this or go back to Pakistan because we don't live like that.
Yeah.
That's the right thing to do.
Leo says, Bleach Demon says, Leo, are you suggesting that Shemima should be working here on only jihads rather than trying to return to England with hot explosive content? I see what he's done there. Very good.
Would you subscribe?
Lord Kevcroft says, the left say Shamima Begum was only a 15-year-old child. She was groomed because she didn't know any better. The left also say, look everyone, my 4-year-old has totally made the independent choice that Zer is pansexual. How delightful. Totally true. So if you can't decide, it's like that Chris Rock bit, how old is 15 really?
You know, I haven't seen that bit actually.
It's a great bit because, you know, he says, it's basically makes the same point but with different aspects. So you know, you've got 15-year-old gang members getting sent to jail, but then people are like, oh, but this 15-year-old girl was groomed by R. Kelly. So he's saying if you've got criminal responsibility and, you know, you can be responsible for a crime, then you can decide if R. Kelly wants to wee on you. So
those kids at Netherlands, they were like, oh, it's great. Not like the Pope. Doesn't treat us like this.
Do you know, before we go...
Gervais bit, but.
Before we go. Also, before I go, you can see more of my videos on my YouTube channel.
Where would they find that YouTube channel,
it's
Leo?
It's on YouTube.
The name, Leo. Oh, it's Leo. You freaking Muppet.
Leo Kiris. Leo Kearse.
And the channel's called Leo.
My name.
And they just type in YouTube.
I think it's
YouTube.
Just called Leo Kearse.
Oh, that's not, I can't
I don't
find
even
him.
Know if it's got a name. It's just me.
Just finding stupid videos about cats. Anyway.
I do videos about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're out of time. So,
oh, shit, sorry.
Bye.
Bye.